Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for February 21st, 2016. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, coming up in about 10 minutes, we're going to have David Wissing from Maryland on our show. He's also more of one of our Republican insiders we have on. So he'll come on about 10 minutes, talk a little bit of national stuff, maybe a little Maryland politics, a little mix there. But we're going to national politics before then. And last night, probably the most eventful night, I think, of the primary season so far, it was one of those nights where you could see the two nominees being the winners from last night. I definitely think on the Democratic side that this is a huge boost and gives Hillary Clinton a huge lead. I think somebody could overcome Donald Trump, but I think he becomes, it's like 50% Donald Trump, 50% someone else, or so, you know, that includes all four other candidates, so that gives him a pretty sizable advantage. Catherine, what are some of your thoughts? We can go Nevada first.
Well, I was very pleased that Secretary Clinton prevailed in Nevada. I think, 53-48? That's, you know, those are good numbers. I didn't really watch much of the news around it. I don't know. I did see the thing about the translating by Secretary Huerta, but I tried to ignore all the brouhaha. I'm getting really tired of these Bernie Sanders. You know, I'm a Hillary Clinton supporter, but not, I haven't given her any money. I don't really speak about it a lot, but I'm really tired of these Bernie Sanders supporters. I think they're doing him a lot of harm by their, you know, sort of volatile reactions to everything. Including some of my Facebook friends who just continue to lash out against Hillary Clinton, where I find them not spending much time boosting this candidate that they're so excited about. So I'm very disappointed in that.
Yeah, I do think that last night I was looking at some of the blog. The Sanders supporters weren't quite the same volatility as they have been. I think this was kind of sobering result. I mean, Nevada, while it has more diversity than the first two states, it's nothing like South Carolina. It was a caucus state, and to me it seemed like a much better opportunity for Bernie Sanders in Nevada than would have been in South Carolina on Tuesday. And if he didn't win there, that means South Carolina's looking even worse. Then you go on to Super Tuesday, in which I don't know what the percentage. I know Minnesota's thrown in some other places, but it's majority southern states that look like South Carolina. And so that's not very good terrain for him. Tim, what are some of your takeaways?
Well, it was a watershed moment, you know, in the Democratic race for certain. It's going to get really tough for Senator Sanders now if you look at the map. She got 76% of the African-American vote in Nevada. If she does that in South Carolina, we've got ourselves a blowout because, 55% or so of the vote 4 years ago was black. You figure it should be that much this year. And then after that, the lay of the land on March the 1st, to me, doesn't look any better for him. Somehow, as I told you before we went on the air, he's got to get through March 15th. and still be within decent striking distance of her. Then as it moves west, he might make some noise if he breaks through with Hispanic voters. But I just don't see much of a way he does stay within striking distance of her by March the 15th. These things are going to come in a hurry now. Two things he's had plenty of up until this point because of the rather leisurely pace is money and time. The money he's got, but now he's not going to have the time. You know, he does his best when he can go in a state and saturate it with town hall meetings and rev the crowds up. But he's not going to be able to do that now. So it's going to be tough for him.
Yeah, I noticed midweek, about Wednesday, Thursday, Quinnipiac came out with a poll showing that Sanders did better among general election matchups than Hillary Clinton did. There was a lot of other bad news. I mean, some of the Nevada polls tightened, and it was looking like this race was going to be pretty close, and you know, Bernie Sanders might win, and he didn't. Now, I always thought the Quinnipiac numbers didn't make a lot of sense just based on, you know, what I think is connected with them. Catherine, what do you think caused Bernie Sanders to not do well specifically in Nevada?
Well, I think that Tim made a good point. You know, he does well when he has time to go around and talk to everybody, and he probably didn't have time to do that, as much of that in Nevada. And
he had more time in Nevada than he will in South Carolina, and then moving forward. He had a little more.
He had a little more, but he probably didn't have as much. I mean, in Iowa and New Hampshire, he's had months to spend there. But, you know, with Nevada so quick after New Hampshire, he probably didn't have as much time. And also, I don't think Secretary Clinton needs as much of that because she's a known entity. And so she can, people know her, and they know her husband, and they know, and she has a lot of surrogates around. So I think that helps her. So that, I don't know if that's all of what is going on. And well, I think it's also just a more diverse population, and I think that helps Secretary Clinton more than it helps Senator Sanders.
No, I mean, definitely so, and it's one change. Tim, based on the midweek news to what happened Saturday, what changed?
Well, I'm not sure anything did. He just he couldn't quite catch her out there. The state was more diverse than the first two. Like I said, she heavily won African American voters. They said that he actually scored better than her among Hispanic voters, but that's been called into question because of the fact that her staff said she was winning 60% of the caucus sites where Hispanic voters were in the majority. So another thing that helped her out there, I believe, was the support of organized labor, which is a heavy thing in Clark County around Vegas, where about 70% of the vote is. Another thing she did, she had a better organization than he did out there. She had a big head start, and her people are out in rural areas picking off delegates and things like that. So somebody described it as Hillary Clinton's I told you so victory. So maybe that's just it. You know, as we move into the more Democratic looking states, you know, as far as what the population actually looks like. It's just going to go better far, and it's going to really go well down here in the South.
Yeah, I'm looking at something that Public Policy Polling did, and I'm going to add South Carolina to it. I'm looking at the 13 states that come up between now and March 8th. Hillary Clinton has a lead in 10 of those 13 states. I'm sorry, let me think. He has a lead in 2. Let me do my math again. 10 of the 12 states. He has a lead in his home state of Vermont and Massachusetts. He has a lead in every other state coming up. And a lot of those are even double-digit leads. Oklahoma's just a 2-point lead, but everywhere else, you know, some as big as 31, like Louisiana. And so it's looking like pretty rough terrain for him. I mean, how long, if these numbers were to hold, he takes, say, Massachusetts, let's say he finds a way to win Oklahoma and wins his home state of Vermont. How much longer could he last if he lost, you know, 9 of 11 states, Catherine?
Well, you know, it depends on how much money he has and how willing he is to, you know, be out there losing. You know, I mean, he could hold on, right? I mean, there's no rule that forces him out, right?
That's right.
No, I mean, at what point does he want, I mean, does he, I mean, you know, Jeb Bush could have held on and he decided to drop out. I mean, at what point does he say there's no end game here?
Well, I think that at some point he might decide that the end game is the convention, that, you know, having standing at the convention might be his end game so that he can, you know, rally his people. I'm sure we're going to talk about Jeb Bush later, but his reasons for dropping out would be very different than than Bernie Sanders' reasons for dropping out.
Yeah, I just, you know, mentioned that as one candidate. We've had a lot of candidates on the Republican side, you know, drop out recently because they had, of course, so many more.
I think if Bernie Sanders dropped out today,
he would get to speak.
Bernie Sanders clearly doesn't have any concern about the party, so. About, you know, sort of bolstering the strength of the party by dropping out and putting his backing behind Secretary Clinton. I mean, that would be the only reason to do that, is to, you know, bolster her. And I don't think he has any interest in doing that. And I don't think his supporters would like that. So I think I don't follow him that closely, but I wouldn't be surprised if he stuck in there a lot longer than you might expect.
Yeah, I mean, he could, you know, I'll say Jerry Brown in 1992. Well, that was good. We talked about the Democratic side of things. We hadn't even gotten to the Republican side of things, and that's perfect timing for our guest. Welcome back to the Kudzu Vine for many times now, David Wissing. Welcome, David.
Thanks for having me. I was waiting to see how long you went on the Democrats, so I figured it was I'd jump in right then.
Hey, a live listener and a guest, a twofer.
Yeah.
Well, good time. And like I said, you can. We pretty much wrapped the Democratic side of things up in Nevada. So let's give you the first thought on South Carolina and where the GOP race stands.
All right. Well, I don't think I've hidden that I am a supporter of Marco Rubio. So you can take that when I state where I think it is. You know, I wish it had never reached this point where Donald Trump's our front runner, but under the circumstances, you know, outside of Rubio winning outright, you know, that's probably last night's results in South Carolina was about the best he could hope for. And with Jeb Bush dropping out, realizing that he has no chance, you know, if you're a member of the establishment or, you know, subscribe to their views, it's what you needed out of last night. I think if Rubio had fallen behind Cruz again last night, that would have been three primaries, well, one a caucus, two primaries in a row where Rubio was behind both Trump and Cruz. And it might have been a narrow margin, but that perception, I think, is huge, at least for him going forward. And I think you see it in the endorsements. I think the senator from Nevada today endorsed Rubio, you know, head of their caucus next week. So, and I think all over the internet you hear about Mitt Romney maybe putting his endorsement for Rubio in soon. To me, I think at this point it's conventional wisdom, but I think it's a 3-man race now. It's Trump, Rubio, or Cruz is going to be the nominee. And if you're a Republican voter, those are your choices at this point, in my mind.
Is Kasich out, considering he did win, he got second place in New Hampshire, a better finish than a lot of Republicans have had, and he is from a swing state. Is Kasich still just a non-factor?
In my mind, he is. I mean, now that we're down to, I guess it's down to 5, in reality, I think Carson, I'm not even sure why he's hanging around at this point, but...
sorry, I can't help
that. But I mean, Kasich is still there. I mean, I actually like Kasich myself. I think the party's lining up behind Rubio much more than Kasich at this point. And I don't know how long Kasich will hang around. You know, every time you read them, they say he doesn't have much of a campaign, national campaign anywhere. I don't know if we'll talk about in Maryland, but I kind of, when I look around Maryland, it's the two big campaigns you see are Cruz and Rubio. I mean, there is a big contingent of Trump supporters, but the Kasich campaign just seems non-existent to me around here. So I don't know where he's getting campaign workers or whatever from. They just
but, yeah. And I guess talking about the supporters now, I'm not in Atlanta, but I drove through Atlanta yesterday. It's real strange. I see a ton of stuff for Trump. And those are probably not your typical, Republican supporters. And then I see a lot for Carson, but I really don't see much for Rubio or Cruz that I've seen in Georgia. But, I mean, that's that, anecdotal politics. It's not as reliable as it may seem. But let me ask you about Rubio and really Cruz for that matter, too. They had a lot of endorsements. Actually, I guess I should say Jeb Bush, not Cruz. They had a lot of endorsements. Tim Scott. Nikki Haley, both Trey Gowdy endorsed Rubio. Lindsey Graham endorsed Jeb Bush. Yet Donald Trump won. Why was the endorsements of all the party leaders not more substantial in stopping Donald Trump?
It's probably the question that everybody's asking this entire campaign. It's where is all the support from Trump coming from? I mean, even in Maryland, I mean, I'm surprised. When I talk to people who are, been with the party for years and years, everybody's like, where are these Trump people coming from? How is he getting the support? But he's still getting a third of the vote. He's gotten I guess Iowa is a little bit lower, but that was a caucus. But New Hampshire, he got over 35%, I think it was. He got, close to, what was it last night, 33%, 34%. I think there's a lot of people out there who just, not involved, haven't really paid that much attention. This year they've decided that Trump's their guy and they're going to support Trump no matter what. And they don't like the politicians, so maybe the endorsements are actually a negative for these other candidates to these voters. And they're like, well, this guy, he's not getting any of the endorsements from the politicians. Let's go for that guy. And so it's hard to explain, but...
I think there's some truth to that. I honestly do. I agree with you. This is Catherine. I think that's true. I think that I don't know this for sure, but my impression is that a lot of the Trump supporters and to some extent the Sanders supporters are generally not voters. They haven't, they're not engaged in politics. They're they got enlivened by something, whether it was Donald Trump or something that happened to them that Donald Trump is speaking to. And so it's engaged them in a way that they haven't been engaged before. Obviously, it's not all of them, but I think there's a big piece of that support that comes from. And I think you're absolutely right. The endorsements don't help. They may hurt.
Yeah, and I think some people – and, yeah, so I agree with you.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to pass it over to Tim for the next questions, and then he can send it to Catherine and so on. Tim?
Yeah. Good evening, Mr. Wissing. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right, Tim. How are you?
Oh, well, I'm tolerable. I'm vertical, so I guess I'm doing okay.
It's always a good day when that happens, right?
Yeah, let me throw some tough love on you here, Dave.
All right.
No candidate has ever lost Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina and then won the nomination. But every candidate who has won both New Hampshire and South Carolina has gone on to win the nomination. Now, I know, obviously, this year is not exactly a normal year. But, on the other hand, there are reasons, as you know, these things are historically true. Are we overlooking the big picture here, and it's just possible that you pretty much already have your nominee?
It could be. I mean, I think a lot of people think Rubio may have it in the bag. I don't actually agree with that. I think that he still has – he's got a lot of work to do still. I think at this point, he's gotten to the point where, in my mind, the party establishment is behind him. And at this point now, it's up to Rubio to go and get it.
But
if he can't, he can't.
Rubio is the guy who has lost Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina. And Donald Trump is the guy who has won both New Hampshire and South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Could it be that this year the people are just saying, you know what, Trump's the nominee?
Yeah, it could very well be. And I mean, my opinion is that would not be a good thing, but it's Rubio's still got a lot of work to do. There's no doubt. Like I said, I think it's a 3-man race. The problem is the other two are Cruz and Trump, who are taking 50%+ of the vote. So Rubio still has to figure out a way to pick off some of those voters to leave it above 50%. And maybe his hope at this point is he just picks up enough delegates to bring it to the convention, and that would be, I think, exciting for everybody. Yeah. I mean, I personally have never been through a brokered convention.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
So,
well, let's get a little tougher here. It's obvious who the clear front runner is right now. It's Donald Trump. Now, on your site some time back, you stated in no uncertain terms that you would oppose his nomination and you would work however you had to defeat him, and would absolutely not vote for it. Where would you then stand if he should win the nomination?
I would not vote for him. I said it. So just for your listeners and the other guests.
I've known you for 10 years, Dave, and you are a rock-rib Republican. If anyone out there is wondering and doesn't know who David Wissing is, trust me, the man runs the national blog. He's as Republican as it gets. That being said, you are saying as a national Republican that you simply could not support Donald Trump.
Yeah, that's what I said, and I still stick by it. And I said it, and I took a lot of heat for it.
I bet you have. Now, have you taken the heat on your side, or just from friends or other Republicans, or I mean, what?
It came from it was a lot of Republicans within the state, you know.
Uh-huh.
And you know, it was fast. I mean, you know me, Tim. I've supported Republicans my entire life. Trust me.
Right.
Being a member of Central Committee, I know you were a member of the Central Committee at one point.
Oh, yes.
State, and trust me, when you're a member of the Central Committee, you end up supporting candidates that you find, you know, personally, you might find appalling, for lack of a better term. But you do it with a smile on your face, and you know, that they're your party, and you defend them, you know, even if personally you have to go home and take a shower afterwards, you know.
Yeah.
But it's the rhetoric. And when I made the statement, it actually right around the time when he had made the statement about how he wanted to register all Muslims in the United States. And to me, you know, I'm a Republican. I will probably always, or for, I should say, I will mostly vote for Republicans. Very rarely will I not. But, you know, sometimes the rhetoric and the viewpoints of a candidate are just to the point where you just can't, as a human being, say, hey, yeah, he's a member of my party. I'm going to support him anyway. I just, at that time, and I just didn't want to be associated with the Republican Party if he's the face of the Republican Party. It just,
yeah.
It was just my, at some point you have to stand up for yourself too, so.
I understand that, Dave. I've not had to make that decision on the national level, but I have had to do it on the local level. And, you know, I'm going to vote for a Republican before I'm going to vote for a member of the Ku Klux Klan, for instance, which I did have a choice twice in Floyd County. But, you know, I understand what you're saying there. So with that, I'm going to throw it over to Catherine, who's probably going to want to talk to you about some Maryland politics and stuff. Go ahead, Catherine.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for being on tonight, David. We really appreciate it.
Of course.
I wonder, you know, I heard what you said, and I understand completely. I'm a lifelong Democrat. I think I was born a Democrat. I'm sure my parents would have assured you that that was the case. But I have voted. I did vote for a Republican once. It was fortunately it was after both of my parents had passed away, so they didn't know about it. But I wonder this reaction to Donald Trump by because I have a handful of friends who are, you know, longtime Republicans, and they that while they might not feel as might not have been as outwardly strong in their opinion as you are, I think they feel the same way. Do you think it has anything to do with the fact that he really never was particularly involved in Republican Party politics? Like, is so just from my perspective, while I won't say that I wouldn't vote for him, I'm not a big fan of Senator Sanders, and part of it is because he never was willing to be a Democrat until he decided to run for president. And do you think that kind of plays into your reaction a little bit to Donald Trump, that he was never a Republican really before? I mean, maybe he voted, who knows, but he wasn't like a standard bearer for the party,
right,
ever.
In Trump's case, no, I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, one thing about being in Maryland and where I live in my county, I mean, my county was pretty Democratic, and the funny thing is a lot of times when the candidates who are Republicans ended up winning, they actually came from the Democratic Party, and, you know, for whatever reason, they left that party. But, you know, they won. They were, you know, a lot of times at county politic level, you know, the parties almost are meaningless to me. I wish they were all nonpartisan races in some cases, but just because, you know, like for a register of wills, like, is there a Democratic or Republican way to be a register of wills? I don't know. But, you know, what color ink do you use? I don't know. But it's to me, it's not. There are many former Democrats that I've supported who became Republicans. You know, glad that's never been a big thing for me.
Okay. I just wondered.
And in this case, Trump being a former Democrat, that actually had nothing to do with it. It was more just his rhetoric and his views on, you know, issues that just, to me, went beyond the pale. And, you know, whether he used to be a Democrat actually had nothing to do with that.
Okay, I just wondered, because I know that some people are feeling that way about Bernie Sanders.
There are
and
people
I do
who
know
feel
some
that
people
way.
Who feel that way about Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So how are things going with party politics in Maryland around the presidential? Like, do your elected officials come out and endorse candidates? And so is there any infighting going on around that in your state party?
From what I've seen, so, you know, our governor, who's Republican, Larry Hogan, he was a supporter of Chris Christie, and I think a lot of that was just when he was running for governor, Chris Christie supported him quite a bit during his run, so I think there was a lot of loyalty there. I don't think there weren't a lot of Christie supporters in the state, but nobody really blamed the governor for supporting Chris Christie. Not blame is probably the wrong word, but, you know, said, okay, he supported him because of that. we don't have a lot of elected officials at the statewide level, as you know. So he's actually our only one. So from a state level, I think from what I've seen, at, you know, at the state legislature level, and most of the elected officials, from what I've seen, have either been Rubio supporters or Ted Cruz supporters. I don't know of any that are Donald Trump supporters offhand. I'm sure there's one or two out there, but they seem to be either Cruz or Rubio seems to have gotten most of the elected officials support. And then even at the central committee level, I mean, there is a contingent of Trump supporters, but from an organizational standpoint, it seems to be Cruz and Rubio, to me, have the most organized campaigns in the state. I know when, I don't know how they do them in Georgia, but in Maryland, when you vote during the primary, you actually vote for the delegates and alternate delegates, you know, as well as the candidate. And I know Cruz and Rubio actually had full slates. I think each congressional district gets three delegates and three alternate delegates. Trump's campaign, I don't think, actually filled all their slots. And I got so many emails, they were begging people to become delegates for Donald Trump. It was fascinating. I mean, Kasich, I don't think they even got 50%. And Carson got a few more, but he has ties to Maryland, so
yeah.
It doesn't surprise me. But and I think Bush may. I don't think Bush even got a full slate. But yeah, I mean that's what I've seen from the presidential level. I don't know if there's a lot of infighting per se. I think spirited debate would probably be the right term. But
yeah, we all have that same Facebook feed, right? Like it's the Bernie.
Yeah. I mean,
on the Republicans it's different, but on my page it's like the Bernie Sanders people beating up on the Hillary Clinton people.
Yeah.
And back and
forth. And our primary is not till the end of April, so although I guess it could still be an open race, but
it could be.
We're still a ways away from actually having.
So
to
what
vote.
Do you think what do you think is Rubio's path to the nomination? Like, does Cruz have to drop out for Rubio to make it to the nomination?
I think first he needs Kasich to drop out, because I think that would consolidate it. I think Carson, like I said, that he's already down to like 2 or 3%, so I don't think he's going to matter too much at this point. In a way, I don't know, things have been so different this year, but having Cruz and Trump beat each other up for a while, probably not the worst thing in the world.
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting
for Rubio, because you know, especially these races. You know, I mean, Trump's been winning these or getting close, but he still hasn't got above really. I think what did he get? 36% in New Hampshire, so he's only still getting about a third of the vote. It's still the winning margin. I go back and forth whether it's better for Rubio to have a head-to-head contest or whether. Keep it a three-way contest. It's probably the unanswerable question until it happens.
Right.
So.
I'm going to pass it back to David. Thanks a lot, David. Back to David McLaughlin.
Yes, yeah. David Wissing, to stay national and stay a little bit Donald Trump, but I want to get in Jeb Bush. I think probably a year ago, people might have considered him the front runner. Obviously, he was best known. In a political sense, not counting Donald Trump, but he dropped out last night. Now, his concession speech or what have you, if you will, it was all over the place. At one point, he was like, yeah, yep, and he talked about people staying on the island, and at one point, he alluded to the fact that he and his wife might have relations later in the night, and it was all over the place. But there's one line that I thought was pretty presidential, but may have alluded to something else. I'm going to read it off the Political Wire. I firmly believe the American people must entrust this office to someone who understands that whoever holds it is a servant, not the master, someone who will commit to that service with honor and decency. That pretty much, I think, is a direct shot at Donald Trump. But the bigger question, should Donald Trump be the nominee, is there a decent chance that either Jeb Bush or other members of the Bush family would support Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump for the presidency?
It may be a case where they just, you know, okay, we'll just quietly fade into the background and, you know, it would shock me if they actually did that, but, you know, they might it may be a case of they do it by their silence. You know, they just, you know, well, we'll just fade away for this election and maybe let Donald Trump just fall on his own and, you know, come back like, we told you so, you know, type thing. But, yeah, I that would surprise me, to be honest. I mean, maybe privately they would wish for that, but I don't see that. Just because, you know, they are so tied to the Republican Party, you know, whether, you know, some people don't like that, but, you know, that's where their political home is. It would be I just don't see it happening, at least publicly.
Yeah, well, I think you're right that they may sit it out. There could be people mm-hmm. with their secret ballot that mm-hmm. Go in there and vote for Hillary Clinton, but then don't tell anybody to embarrass the party or hurt future generations. Well, let me ask you this. Where does the Bush machine and the money machine in particular go to now? Does it go to Rubio or does it go to Cruz or someone else?
My guess would be, I mean, it's hard to tell. It depends on how closely they're tied. But my guess is a lot of the, you know, people who want to win are going to go to Rubio, in my opinion. You know, it's hard. That would just be my guess. But I guess I've always read that the Bush and Cruz don't get along. But, you know, with people with the money, they, you know, they kind of go their own way. So I guess you never really know. You know, they have their reasons, you know, for picking a candidate. And so and they could go to Kasich for all I know in the short term. I just don't see Kasich surviving too much longer. So in a way, I think Kasich is closer to Bush, you know, ideologically. But I think a lot of people who were with Bush were with him because they wanted to win. And they're going to go with somebody who they think can win versus yeah, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, until Kasich shows something, it would be hard for him to garner support. Well, let me pass it on to Tim to get this into Maryland politics, like we had kind of stated. Tim?
Well, one thing I wanted to ask you about Maryland is you got a U.S. Senate race this year. Babs Mikulski is standing down. And what's the shape of that race? What's it looking like?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's probably safely a Democratic seat. It'd probably be a shock to everyone. There'd be a lot more going on if the Republicans won. Right now, so I think the last time I talked to you, there was still a question whether Elijah Cummings was going to drop in. He was the congressman.
Uh-huh.
I'm out here. I'm sure you all know who he is. And
right.
And I think it was the day before, it might have even been the day of the filing deadline. You know, he finally publicly announced that he wasn't going to run for the U.S. Senate. I think by that point, most people figured he wasn't, but I guess he finally made it official. And he filed for, you know, the congressional seat instead. So that basically left two Democrats, both congressmen, or one congresswoman, one congressman, Chris Van Hollen and Donna Edwards. Surprised there has been, I would have expected more polling for this race considering the primaries, I guess about 2 months away now. But the race, I think, from what all the polling is showing, has been a lot tighter than I think a lot of people were expecting. Chris Van Hollen has a lot more money. He would be, in my mind, the establishment choice of the Democrats. I think Harry Reid endorsed him the day he announced. But like I said, the money, Van Hollen seems to have all the money. So he would, on paper, should be the favorite. But, you know, Donna Edwards sticking around, and she's beaten an incumbent before. So I don't think it would shock a lot of people if she won. But I think Chris Van Hollen is probably considered the favorite right now for the Democrats.
And is Senator Mikulski sided with anyone?
I don't believe she has.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, she may have. I just missed it. But I don't believe she has at this point.
I'll just interject. Donna Edwards has been to Atlanta at least twice for fundraisers that I've been invited to. So I'm sure she's going around the country, so that might be part of why she's able to stick in there, is that she's raising money, you know, sort of around the country. She has been getting a lot of money.
Yeah, from I know she's getting a lot of money from out of state, and like I said, she got her seat where she is now because she beat an incumbent. I think it was Albert Wynn, I think it was. So she's proven that she can beat an incumbent. I mean, Van Hollen's not an incumbent, but I guess he's considered the establishment choice. So they'd be like beating an incumbent. Republicans, I mean, there's probably 15 people running, but I think the probably top candidates, the minority whip for the Republicans in the House of Delegates, she threw her name in. Perfectly capable candidate, but it's just the wrong state. So for her, I don't know, she might be building her name up, you know, state name recognition up for statewide run later. All of Maryland's elections, statewide elections, are all on off-year elections, or midterm elections. So it's kind of a free shot for her, you know.
Now I want to take an about face and go to a subject that's near and dear to both of our hearts, and that's the Hedgehog Report. Now, you know, you got a lot of longtime posters, and a lot of them are political people like me. A lot of them have been elected officials, are elected officials, but most are involved in politics.
Mm-hmm.
And you have them on there from Penn State University down here to below me in Florida and all the way across where Tina is in San Francisco. You got people all over the country. What are they saying about this presidential election? Who's their preferred candidate of choice?
Well, I think maybe I'm swaying it a little bit, but I think if you read through the comments a little, it probably tends to be a more moderate-leaning crowd,
mm-hmm.
so to speak. I mean, I think there are a lot of Rubio, and I think a lot of it's the people on my site tend to – we kind of look at it from a who can win. It tends to be a less, you know, issue-driven site, more of a, you know, the – for lack of a better – just watching the scoreboard type thing. And so I think a lot of people on my site, they want to win, and I think they think Rubio. We had a lot of – I mean, we had Bush supporters, and there's a few Kasich – yeah – supporters on there. I will say we have very few Trump people, although we get them, and it creates a debate, but they kind of follow my lead, so to speak, I should say.
Yeah.
Not following me, but, you know, it just kind of worked out that way.
Yeah.
So,
I'm going to give you one final question on this presidential race, and then I'll throw it back to Catherine for anything else she might want to talk to you about. But we have three main candidates left in this race. Do you think it's shaping up that Ted Cruz is probably the odd man out because his group of support is so narrowly focused?
Yeah, I think his only hope is that Trump supporters just start abandoning him, which is clearly not happening yet. I mean, I don't think he's going to get any supporters from Rubio's camp. He may get some of the Carson people, but like I've said before, there ain't many of those left. So I don't know where he gets the rest of his support. You know, his only hope is that he takes enough away from Donald Trump, because he's not going to take it away from Rubio or Casey.
So he's pretty well stuck with evangelical support, and that's about it, right?
Yeah, but even that, he didn't. I think in South Carolina last night, he didn't even win that. You know, I think
he did not. Trump
did. Actually beat him out. That's what I'm saying is, unless he can somehow start grabbing voters from Trump, which humorously enough might actually help Rubio, because then it'll, you know, keeps it as a three-way race, and all Rubio has to do is get, you know, a little bit more than the other two.
Okay, well, let me throw it back over to Catherine now, Catherine.
Well, I think that's an interesting, the idea that keeping it in a three-way is beneficial for Rubio. But, I mean, at some point, there's got to be, well, maybe not. Maybe it just stays a three-way. I don't know. I don't think that Ted Cruz can draw support from other candidates because I think he's just, like, unlikable. So
oh,
it's not, you know what I mean? Like, I've been saying that all along for weeks. But I think in order to do that, you have to somehow be likable and draw people away. But I just don't see that he has those kind of skills.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that's the one thing about Trump is, I mean, I'm not a fan of his, but he is he's mesmerizing.
You can totally
to watch
see
sometimes.
It, right? I can totally
yeah.
see why people like him.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand it, but I kind of get it.
Yeah, I mean, when he's on TV, I'll be honest, like he's fascinating to watch because he's like, I mean, one, it's like a train wreck, but yeah, whatever you think about Trump, he is fast on his feet. He's very comfortable in his own skin. And, you know,
he's very authentic in a very fake
right.
and orange
right.
way. It's really, it's
yeah.
disturbing in a way,
yeah.
but it's true. I mean, I think, you know, he doesn't shy away from saying what he thinks, even if it's, you know, largely unliked by people. I mean, they talk to people, they say, well, you know, that isn't really true. Oh, well, yeah, I know, but I still like him.
Yeah.
So, you got to give him some kind of credit for that. I don't know that that means he should be would be a good president, but
I agree with you. But, I mean, I think it was like, I think I said this last time I was on, like, watching Jeb Bush, I like Jeb Bush, but it was like watching paint dry. You just sit there and watch him, and it's, oh my
God,
there's
a little bit of that with Kasich, too. I think that, and I think that Rubio is, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I don't really want to run against him, but he is a good candidate. He's got
mm-hmm.
the right look, and he's sort of everything that Hillary Clinton isn't. And so I think he's the candidate I least want to run against. Sorry. But
no,
I don't have any. I'm going to pass it back to David McLaughlin for wrap up, I guess.
Yeah. Well, David, let me ask you about another thing. We talked, it was the main topic last week, the Supreme Court opening and Antonin Scalia his passing. And now we're kind of a full week out from it. And there's a political side that's been created. Should this thing remain open? And polling came out and it showed it was divided completely among party lines. There wasn't
mm-hmm.
any, you know, constitutional analysis. It was like, this is good for my party, I think this. Either way, what is your take on it?
Well, I guess maybe when I say inside the bubble, sometimes is you think things matter to people more than they, you know, the public at large. To me, if the Supreme Court's one of your big issues, you probably already have a side in this issue, and you're probably already a you know, pretty reliable voter. The people who, yeah, I don't know. I think the one mistake Republicans made was they came out so quickly and saying we're not going to consider it whatsoever. You know, there's a lot more subtle ways to do that without being so overt. They could have just kept their mouth shut. President Obama puts up a nominee. They say, well, nope, too liberal. We vote him down. Puts up another one. Nope, too liberal. We put him down. That would have been a lot more subtle than just, hey, we're not going to consider anybody whatsoever. I mean, that was probably just from an optics point of view. But I don't know. In my mind, Supreme Court's one of your big issues. It's not going to move the needle that much, you know, in my opinion. It's just one of those issues that it may make you more upset from one side or the other, but it's not going to change votes, in my opinion. Maybe I'm on the, you know, minority view of that, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, and so politically, do you think it'll have a real impact on the race, or it'll be people are just going to vote how they're going to vote, and it's mainly turnout.
Yeah, I like I said, I don't think it's going to have as big an impact as people think it is, at least the way I guess the pundits think it's going to have. I just personally don't. It's just...
Yeah. Well, I'll let Tim have the final questions in case there's any other Maryland politics we need to kind of catch up on. Tim?
Yeah. I know that the way congressional districts are drawn in the United States, they're, what, 15 contested districts out of the 435. And so all of the action is during the primaries themselves. Do you see any huge upsets brewing in any of the congressional districts in Maryland?
No, and out of the 15 competitive, none of them are Maryland. So, yeah, I think, you know, Republicans, you know, there's always talk about the Republicans gerrymandering a lot of these states. I'll tell you, the Democrats have done a pretty darn good job in the state of Maryland of gerrymandering these districts. So it's, I think it's 7-1 now. It'll be 7-1 when it's, you know, after November.
Now you let me interject there. You have the first congressional district as a Republican, right? And how is he doing, and is he safe this election cycle from a challenge within the party?
From everything I've heard, he should win. Now, there was Andy Harris is the congressman we're talking about. Who, ironically, he actually beat incumbent, what was his name, Wayne Gilchrist. I think it was back in 2008, the year Obama won. So he actually, you know, they accused Gilchrist of being too liberal. He ran and beat him in the primary. He actually lost the general election the first time, but then won it a couple years later. So, you know, what is it now? 6 years later, now he's the one being accused of being too liberal by candidates in his district. There's a candidate. He was actually a former state delegate. He actually lost his primary when he was running for state delegate as an incumbent. Taking on Andy Harris, Michael Schmiegel, his name. He put out a poll. Schmiegel put out a poll claiming he was leading Harris, but just about nobody believed the poll. it was one of these push polls, for lack of a better term, but basically had about five questions just completely ripping Andy Harris apart, and then the final question was, who do you support in this, you know, election? Everything I've heard is he should win. Now, it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, he only gets like 60% or so, but and I think there's a couple other candidates running too now, so it's not a head-to-head matchup. That's probably only competitive or somewhat competitive challenge to an incumbent. Like I said, we have the two open seats on the Democratic side, where Donna Edwards and Chris Van Hollen, you know, they're running for the U.S. Senate, so. They definitely have competitive races in those. I'm not going to pretend to tell you that I know who the Democrats are leaning towards there. But I know in District 4, the Democratic candidate for governor the last time is now trying to run for Congress, even though he lost, you know, his race for governor. And I think in District 8, it's actually Kathleen Matthews is actually Chris Matthews from MSNBC's wife running.
Right.
And there's a state senator, a relatively well-known state senator running, Jamie Raskin. So that, you know, that's considered a competitive race. But I don't know enough to know who the favorite is in either of those races, you know, on the Democratic side. But whoever wins those are going to win the general election. There's probably no danger of that.
Yeah, I got news for you on that particular race. Daily Coast has been talking about it. They don't have a clue who's going to win either there. So
it
must be pretty tight. You know, with someone with a celebrity status steps into a race, it kind of throws it into a muddle. And, of course, the wife of Chris Matthews would qualify as a celebrity, I suppose.
And that district's right in the suburbs of D.C., so it, the Washington Post covers that, you know, every day there's an article about it. But even reading the articles, it's hard to tell who's, you know, really ahead or, you know, expected to win. So that, yep.
Now, I got one final question for you before you go. Even though you've been on several times before, we may have some new listeners that have never heard David Wissing before. And so we'd like for you, if you would, to give us your contact information. If somebody likes the sound of David Wissing, wants to read more about him and from him, tell us where they can go and do that.
No, well, the website's hedgehogreport.com, all one word. And, you know, just go on there. It's an old-style blog. I haven't changed the format of the site in probably 10 years. Actually, I did try to change it once, and nobody liked it, so I changed it back, and I haven't changed it since. So yeah. I haven't touched the format of the site, though.
Yeah. Well, that's good, David. You got to remember we're all political people on there, and we're simple-minded.
Yep.
We can't handle a lot of change. But And your site, of course, features polling as the main focus.
Yes.
Does it not? Yes.
Yeah. So I tend to be more one of those aggregators. Probably less so than, like, you know, some of the other more established sites. But, you know, to me, it's more of a discussion board more than anything. And, you know, I like to throw the numbers up there and give my short opinion and then let the people have at it, so to speak. So. And they have fun, and Tim's on there once in a while. Not as much as he used to be, but.
All right, and we thank him. We'll throw it back to David to close it out.
Oh, yeah. Well, David Wissing, thanks for being on. I know that things will be busy in your state between now and April 26th. Y'all's primary comes up pretty quickly, and that'll have a lot of races going on. So I hope people read the Hedgehog Report.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Yeah. We'll see you online.
All right. Thank you, guys.
And, guys, we have about 2 minutes. Really not enough time to get deep into a topic. Catherine, you got anything going on? We saw if you'd go cover the huge event at the World Congress Center, but you didn't come through for us on that one, the Donald Trump rally.
No, I did not. Anything I did not go out of my apartment today because of it.
Yeah, so... Well, and then until then, I guess it'll be the kudzu vine for this evening. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, guys.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in...